Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast, your source for current issues within the legal practice. Today, the Federalist Society's Religious Liberties Practice Group is hosting a debate on Salazar versus Buono. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speakers. Salazar versus Buono was recently argued before the United States Supreme Court and is still awaiting the court's decision. This case involves a war memorial in the form of a large Latin cross erected 70 years ago by the veterans of foreign wars. After one court held that the cross memorial violated the Establishment Clause, Congress arranged for the Secretary of the Interior to swap the acre of land with the cross to the VFW in exchange for a parcel of equal value. A district court permanently enjoined the swap, and the Court of Appeals affirmed. The United States Supreme Court has two issues before it. First, whether Buono has standing, and second, if he has standing, whether the transfer of land to the VFW should be allowed to proceed as an alternative to ending display of the cross. For our debate, we are privileged to have two experienced Supreme Court advocates, both well-practiced in Establishment Clause litigation, and coincidentally, both magna cum laude graduates of Harvard Law School. Representing Petitioner Salazar's position, we have Ted Cruz, who is one of several authors of the amicus brief on behalf of the veterans of foreign wars in this case. Mr. Cruz heads the National Appellate Group at Morgan, Lewis & Bockius. He has argued 8 times before the United States Supreme Court. Prior to joining Morgan Lewis, Mr. Cruz was the Solicitor General of Texas. He won the Best Brief Award by the National Association of Attorneys General for U.S. Supreme Court Briefs for 5 consecutive years. He has also taught United States Supreme Court litigation at the University of Texas School of Law. Before he became Texas's Solicitor General, Mr. Cruz served as Director of the Office of Policy Planning for the Federal Trade Commission, as an Associate Deputy Attorney General for the U.S. Justice Department, and as a Domestic Policy Advisor for the Bush-Cheney 2000 campaign. Mr. Cruz received his J.D. magna cum laude for Harvard Law School, where he was a primary editor of the Harvard Law Review, an executive editor of the Harvard Journal of Law and Public Policy, and a founding editor of the Harvard Latino Law Review. Mr. Cruz earned his A.B. from Princeton cum laude. He clerked for Judge Michael Luttig of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit, and for Chief Justice William Rehnquist of the United States Supreme Court. Representing the respondent, we have Peter Eliasberg, who argued this case in the United States Supreme Court on behalf of Mr. Buono, whom he also represented in the District Court in the Ninth Circuit. Mr. Eliasberg is the managing attorney and Mannheim family attorney for First Amendment rights for the ACLU of Southern California. He has worked with the ACLU since 1996. Mr. Eliasberg has successfully represented plaintiffs in a broad and diverse mix of civil rights cases. He won the case finding California's Prop 187 unconstitutional. He successfully challenged the confinement of Susan McDougal in the Whitewater investigation. And he helped a history professor in obtaining documents from the FBI surveillance of John Lennon in the 1970s. Mr. Eliasberg has worked to ensure compliance with the ADA and for the mobility impaired and equal access to educational facilities and classes. He has successfully handled a widely diverse group of First Amendment cases, including the rights to petition, display signs, hold an adult art exhibition, and criticized the school principal in an open letter to the community. Specifically in the Establishment Clause area, he has won a case in the Ninth Circuit, finding prayers at school board meetings unconstitutional, and obtained an injunction halting a city-sponsored March for Jesus parade. Mr. Eliasberg earned his J.D. magna cum laude from Harvard, where he was an Ames Moot Court semifinalist. He received his B.A., also magna cum laude, from Yale with honors in history. Mr. Eliasberg clerked for Judge Stanley Sporkin on the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, and for Judge Stephen Reinhart on the Ninth Circuit. Our speakers will each have an opening statement and a rebuttal, and then time for questions and answers. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Cruz. Let's begin.
Thank you very much. It's very good to be with you. I'm pleased to participate in this podcast discussing this important case. As was just mentioned, this case began 75 years ago, in 1934, when a group of World War I veterans went to the desert, to the Mojave Desert, seeking peace and solitude. Those veterans erected a monument, a single white Latin cross, to remember their brethren who had given their lives in World War I. For some 70 years, that monument sat in the Mojave Desert, undisturbed and causing no commotion whatsoever, until this lawsuit began. The ACLU and an individual plaintiff brought a lawsuit seeking to tear down the monument. The reason for the lawsuit was their view of the Establishment Clause that it does not permit the display of a cross on public land. The lawsuit, initially at least, has been successful. In the district court, the plaintiff prevailed, and in the Ninth Circuit, the plaintiff prevailed. As a result, today, this 75-year-old Veterans Memorial sits covered in a plywood box by order of the court because the determination has been made that onlookers cannot gaze upon this image. I would suggest that outcome is profoundly disturbing and is inconsistent with Supreme Court precedent. The case before the U.S. Supreme Court involves three issues. There are two procedural issues, one involving the transfer of the land, and the second involving standing. But looming behind both of those issues is what I would submit is an even more important issue, which is the merits of the lawsuit. Now, in litigating this case before the U.S. Supreme Court, the ACLU made clear they very much do not want the merits of the lawsuit reached. Their position is the merits were decided by the district court, an injunction was issued, and the United States failed to appeal from that injunction. Accordingly, they endeavored mightily to persuade the court not to address the merits. My clients in this case, the Veterans of Foreign Wars and the American Legions and a number of national veterans organizations, filed an amicus brief urging the court to address the merits in this case, to address the central issue, because we submit the position of the lower court on the merits is profoundly wrong, and it is inconsistent with U.S. Supreme Court precedent. The view of the plaintiffs in this case and the view of the Ninth Circuit is an extreme view of the First Amendment. It is a view of the First Amendment that permits no reasonable acknowledgement of faith or of religion. And that view is entirely inconsistent with the history of our nation, with the interpretation of our Constitution for centuries, and with Supreme Court precedent. A single Latin cross is one of, if not the most common, symbol memorializing fallen veterans. If one goes to the Arlington Cemetery, one of the first things a visitor will see is the Argonne Cross rising above. One will also see the Canadian Cross of Sacrifice. And if one travels to military cemeteries throughout the world, over and over again, the visitor will confront row upon row of crosses and stars of David, reflecting and commemorating fallen soldiers. The view that a religious symbol cannot be displayed on public land calls into serious jeopardy the continued existence of these hundreds and even of thousands of veterans' memorials and other memorials throughout the country. That's a view that is an extreme view, and it's not consistent with the Constitution. Now, in all likelihood, the Supreme Court will resolve the case on the procedural grounds rather than on the merits. And it will address one of two issues. Number one, whether the plaintiff in this case has standing. And number two, whether the transfer to private hands cured any potential constitutional violation. With respect to standing, the plaintiff in this case pleaded that he was offended by a display of a cross on public land because Congress has now transferred the land to private hands, to the ownership of the VFW. The plaintiff in this case no longer has pleaded any injury to himself. He did not plead that he would be offended by the display of a cross on private land, and indeed he doesn't maintain that now. And so one of the central questions in this case is, does he have any injury whatsoever now that the cross has been transferred to private land? like the merits, the position of the plaintiff is they don't want the court to get to that question. Because if the court gets to that question, if the court addresses whether he has a particularized injury today, it's very clear the answer will be no. What they argue is that standing was subsumed in the merits, and it can't be revisited now. But of course, the merits have changed substantially, and the reason they've changed substantially is that Congress passed a statute transferring ownership of the land to the VFW post that intends to preserve the land, to uphold and to keep the monument so that veterans may come and remember and reflect. The argument of the ACLU is that even though the land is going to be in private hands, even though it is going to be maintained by the VFW, the fact that it was once government land, the fact that they brought a lawsuit to begin with, in essence, taints the monument, taints it in a way that carries forward and says the cross, the Veterans Memorial, cannot be displayed. That position, I would suggest, finds no support in the U.S. Constitution and is inconsistent with Supreme Court precedent. Thank you.
Well, I'd like to begin by clarifying or correcting a number of the statements Mr. Cruz made about the case, but let me briefly just introduce my client and myself. Thank you very much, first of all, for doing this and allowing us both to debate this important issue on this podcast. As an ACLU lawyer, I represent Frank Buono, who is a veteran, a devout Catholic, and a retired Park Service employee who did indeed challenge the presence of a Latin cross on federal land in the Mojave National Preserve. The Latin cross, as I think most people know, is the preeminent symbol of Christianity and signifies that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and died to redeem mankind from its sins. It is a religious symbol that has no religious significance or meaning to people of any religion other than Christianity. The property on which the cross was erected in 1934 has never been owned by a private party. It's never been owned by the VFW, and it's never been owned by Mr. Sandoz. A cross has not stood in that place for 70 years, and it certainly has not stood undisturbed. The cross that is there now was erected in 1998. Its only resemblance to the cross that was erected in 1934 is that it is in the shape of a Latin cross. It, in fact, has stood disturbed for many years because the cross that was first erected came down many, many years ago and has been down at various times over the course of history, and this is probably the third or fourth iteration of the cross. Another important fact that Mr. Cruz never mentions is that the government had granted preferential access to this federal land to people only to people who want to erect a Christian symbol on it. Mr. Sandoz erected the current version of the cross in 1998. In 1999, prior to this lawsuit, a man requested that he be allowed to put up a Buddhist memorial in the same area, and the federal government said absolutely not, and if you try to do that, we will arrest you for doing so. So this isn't just a case about whether there can be a religious symbol on public land, but about whether the government can grant preferential access to government land and favor one particular form of religious expression over another. Mr. Cruz is incorrect that we don't want the court to look at the merits because we're afraid we'll lose or because our position and the position that the district court and the Ninth Circuit found to be correct, that this preferential access violated the Establishment Clause. It's not because we're afraid of the merits of it. It's the fact is we just have a respect for basic rules of procedure and res judicata. There was a judgment in this case holding that the presence of the cross violated the Establishment Clause. It came at summary judgment. The federal government did not seek certiorari on that judgment, and therefore, as basic rules of res judicata provide, all of the issues subsumed in that judgment, including both the merits and the holding that Mr. Buono had standing, are resolved. And proper respect for procedure requires that that judgment is final. And subsequently, in this case, the court only took certiorari on the question of R and Mr. Buono's motion to enforce the judgment in which he held that the land transfer was inconsistent with the district court's judgment. So it is not a fear of having the court consider the merits that led us to argue that there simply was no basis to revisit the merits of this case, but a simple respect for procedure. In fact, if we were to, and it is true that the VFW did seek to intervene and ask the court to consider the original merits of the case, but the court rejected that motion for intervention, and I think properly, recognizing that that issue was not an issue that the government had sought cert on and certainly didn't seek cert on after the initial judgment, and therefore wasn't properly considered. But let me just briefly discuss why we have no concerns about the merits. I think that there is nothing more consistent with constitutional tradition than the idea that the government should not favor one particular form of religion or one form of religious expression over another. And in this case, what the government did was said, in effect, to a Buddhist, we don't want your memorial here, but we're more than happy to permit a Latin cross here in the form of a memorial. But the holding of the district court and the Court of Appeals, which is correct, also does not, as Mr. Cruz contends, threaten the presence of all religious displays on government land. We made very clear in our briefs that we have no problem whatsoever with the VA's current policy of allowing, I believe, 36 different emblems of belief on the headstones in Arlington National Cemetery and other national cemeteries. By doing so, the government is simply reflecting the private religious expression of the families or the soldiers who have died representing their country. And I think that that is an entirely appropriate and constitutionally permissible way of having religious displays on public property. In fact, both my father and my grandfather are Jewish war veterans, my father in World War II and my grandfather in World War I. And if they, and they and their Jewish comrades or people of other religions, it's totally appropriate for them to express their religion through symbols on their headstones. It's an entirely different matter when the government selects one religious symbol as an expression of a memorial to all Americans. And Mr. Cruz also leaves out the fact that the government designated this cross to be one of only 49 national memorials in the whole country, and the only national memorial reflecting American participation in World War I and purporting to memorialize the service of all American veterans. But in so doing, they deliberately snubbed the service of the more than 250,000 Jews who fought for the United States in World War I, and the more than 3,500 who died for the United States. They deliberately snubbed the contribution and participation of the uncounted but numerous Muslim veterans and people of other faiths. It is one thing to put a religious symbol on a gravestone, which understandably reflects the religion of the family or the person who died. It is another to select one religious symbol and say, this religious symbol will stand as a tribute to all who fought here, even if many of you don't believe in this religious symbol and it doesn't reflect your own religious beliefs. Those are entirely different questions, and Mr. Cruz attempts to elide the two and say that our position would, for example, require that there couldn't be religious symbols on individual headstones, which is not our position and wouldn't be a result of this case. Fundamentally, the lower court decisions were correct on the merits, and as far as standing is concerned, the reality was that Mr. Buono is offended by the presence of this symbol on government property. The court held that he had standing, and that judgment is subsumed in the judgment. That holding is subsumed in the judgment in this case. With respect to the question of whether he had standing to seek an enforcement of the judgment and the injunction that he was entered by the court, the answer is obvious. It's basic civil procedure to hold that the person on whose behalf an injunction has been entered obviously has standing to go to court and say the government isn't obeying the injunction, and therefore the court needs to enforce the injunction by prohibiting the transfer. Now, whether Mr. Buono wins on the merits or not, that has nothing to do with whether he has standing. If he doesn't have standing to enforce his injunction, nobody does. But of course, he does have standing because it's his injunction and it was entered in his favor. And finally, Mr. Cruz is simply incorrect to say that his position now is that the cross cannot be transferred to private land because the fact of previous government ownership taints the taints it forever. That's never been our position in a case. In fact, we very clearly said that there are numerous reasons why the government's transfer of land does not end the constitutional violation here and is not valid. One, the cross is designated a national memorial. So while the government likes to say, well, it's private land, so everyone will assume that the cross is the expression of the private owner, it begs common sense for the government to claim that to be true when it itself has designated this symbol as a national memorial. If it's not the government's expression, why is it designating it a national memorial? Second of all, the government, in transferring the land, didn't allow all comers to bid on the land. It transferred the land to the same groups who've had preferential access to the land in the first instance. You don't cure preferential treatment by preferring the very same people who were preferred in the first instance. So this case on the transfer has nothing to do with a permanent taint, as Mr. Cruz would like to contend. It has to do with the fact that the cross remains designated a national memorial. It is being transferred in a way that favors the very few people who got impermissible favorable access in the first instance. And finally, the cross is not really going to be fully transferred to a private owner because the government is maintaining an important property interest in the land in the form of a reversionary interest. Again, if the government's syllogism is...
Thank you, Mr. Leisberg. It's time for rebuttals. I apologize for cutting you off.
Not a problem.
Ms. Cruz, your turn. 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Sure. The U.S. Supreme Court last addressed the merits of an Establishment Clause issue in a major case in Van Orden versus Perry. In that case, which I had the privilege as the Solicitor General of Texas of representing the state of Texas along with Attorney General Greg Abbott, Texas prevailed 5-4, and the court upheld the constitutionality of a public monument displaying the Ten Commandments on the state capitol grounds. In his opinion for the plurality, Chief Justice Rehnquist described the Supreme Court's Establishment Clause jurisprudence as Janus-faced, facing in two different ways. And that is the very heart of the dispute we have in this case today and in this podcast. There are two very, very different views of what the Establishment Clause is all about. One view is that the Establishment Clause mandates that federal courts scour the public square, looking for any acknowledgement, any hint of faith or religion or the Almighty, and remove that offending acknowledgement. That view is reflected by lawsuits like this lawsuit, like the lawsuit against Ten Commandments monuments all across the country, like lawsuits against the Pledge of Allegiance because it includes the word under God, like lawsuits seeking to have the United States currency changed and the phrase, "In God We Trust," removed. All of those lawsuits, I would suggest, are misguided. And they are misguided because they embody a hostility to faith that the Establishment Clause was never about. Rather, what the Establishment Clause is about, and the second view of the Establishment Clause, is that it works hand in hand with the Free Exercise Clause, that both were designed to protect religious liberty, to allow individual citizens to seek God in their own way, to follow their own conscience, to celebrate and protect and cherish religious freedom and diversity. I mean, after all, this was a nation founded by people fleeing religious persecution. Now, the view of the plaintiffs in this case is extreme, and the clearest illustration of that is the Canadian Cross of Sacrifice, which I discussed in my opening statement. That stands in Arlington. It is a 24-foot gray granite cross. It dominates the surroundings. And it is not a tomb. Mr. Eliasberg's response was an individual tomb is fine. The Canadian Cross of Sacrifice is not a tomb. It is a monument. And the theory the ACLU is propounding here would require tearing down that monument and any other monument with any religious expression in it. And nothing in the Constitution supports that view.
Whatever Mr. Cruz may believe about the boundaries of the Constitution and the Establishment Clause, this case deals with a particular interest, and the merits of it, we're not even talking now about the transfer, but the merits of it deals with a blatant act of governmental favoritism for one particular form of religious expression over another. So questions about whether the government may acknowledge religion generally with a statement like "In God We Trust," or non-sectarian prayers at opening legislative bodies are simply not presented in the merits of this case. And I think that I would merely point Mr. Cruz to Justice Scalia's own dissenting opinion in a case involving non-sectarian prayer, in which he dissented and said there's nothing wrong with opening graduation ceremonies with non-sectarian prayer. But then he says, in effect, that the Establishment Clause was that it's a different issue entirely when the government demonstrates a favoritism for one particular religious belief that would divide those people of different faiths, such that, for example, with an acknowledgement of the divinity of Christ. But that's what the cross in the Mojave Preserve signifies. It signifies the divinity of Christ. It is not a symbol that is meaningful to Jewish war veterans, to Buddhist war veterans, to Islamic war veterans, or it's not meaningful in the sense that it doesn't reflect their sacrifice and their beliefs. So this is not a case about general acknowledgments about God. It is a case about a very specific sectarian preference, which even Justice Scalia, in his opinion, in Lee versus Wiseman, suggests is not permissible under the Establishment Clause. And therefore, we believe that this is simply a blatant example of governmental favoritism that is not only inconsistent with the Constitution, but sends a terrible message to our Jewish war veterans, to our Muslim war veterans, that their sacrifice is not important and their sacrifice doesn't matter, because the way the government is going to express its appreciation for them is with a symbol that says Jesus is divine. And finally, the issue about the Canadian Cross of Sacrifice is very different from this case, because there are no other symbols around the cross here. It is the only symbol. It is also the only national memorial reflecting American participation in World War I. The Canadian Cross of Sacrifice is surrounded by thousands and thousands of tombstones with different religious symbols on them. And finally, the other thing is, it is a gift from a foreign government. And the fact is that the Canadian government and the British Empire chose the cross as the proper memorial symbol because they stated that they are a Christian empire. Frankly, if the United States government had refused to, for example, to erect or accept a gift from the Israeli government in the form of a Star of David in a reflection of appreciation for American troops who'd fought in various wars in the Middle East, that would be a grave Establishment Clause problem. But the Canadian Cross of Sacrifice is factually very different from the situation we have here.
Thank you to both of our speakers for those opening statements and rebuttals. And we'll have a little cross-examination time.
All right. Ted, I have a question for you. You talked about how you believe that the Establishment Clause permits and history has long allowed a governmental acknowledgement of religion. But what I was wondering is whether you believe that the Establishment Clause permits governmental favoritism for one particular religious belief over another. And also, in a related vein, do you think that granting preferential access to persons who wanted to engage in Christian religious expression compared with others who wanted to engage in other forms of religious expression onto this federal land is consistent with the Establishment Clause?
A terrific question, and the short answer is, of course, the Establishment Clause does not permit government favoritism. What the Establishment Clause and free exercise were both about was protecting individual religious liberty and freedom of conscience. But the question is, what is favoritism? A clear example of favoritism would be if the government established a religion, to go to the heart of what the Establishment Clause was about, created a religion, funded a religion, paid the religious clergy. That would clearly be impermissible under the Establishment Clause. Moreover, if the government actively proselytized for any particular religion, that would be impermissible under the Establishment Clause. But that's a far, far way from allowing a permissible acknowledgement of faith that has been part of the history of who we are as a people. And I would point out that the Establishment Clause has always welcomed diversity, whether it is the Latin cross on this display, or on the Canadian Cross of Sacrifice, or the Argonne Cross, or whether it is in Seattle, a Native American totem pole that is a religious symbol that is erected by the city in a Seattle park, or whether it is in the state of Hawaii, a legislative designation of Buddha Day, or whether it is in the state of Texas, symbols of Aztec mythology that are in the rotunda of the Texas Capitol. All of those are consistent with the Establishment Clause and reflect the religious diversity of our nation. The position of the ACLU, however, is that any one of those cannot be allowed unless you immediately put every other religion side by side. And that is an extreme interpretation that the Supreme Court has never embraced. I would submit the reason at the end of the day that I think the ACLU quite rightly doesn't want the court to get to the merits is if the court got to the merits, a majority would conclude this monument was constitutional.
Given that I only have a brief response, let me respond solely in the context of this case rather than taking this in, because the Establishment Clause, I think everyone has acknowledged at some point or other that it's very fact-specific and it's a little hard to deal with lots and lots and lots of different hypotheticals. But with respect to this case, even if we accept the idea that even sectarian acknowledgments are okay, what we have here, the government has designated 49 symbols as national memorials, only some of which are national memorials to talk about war and to recognize our veterans. Only one of them is a national memorial for World War I veterans. It is not a sort of permissible acknowledgement, but I would submit a dramatic and impermissible favoritism for the government to say the only symbol we are going to designate as a national memorial for American servicemen in World War I is a Latin cross, which means purely and simply that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and he died to redeem mankind for his sins. That is not a tolerable acknowledgement, but a dramatic display of favoritism on behalf of the government for one religious belief over another and one that is not consistent with our constitutional traditions.
Thank you. Mr. Eliasberg, this question is for you. You, at the end of your opening statement, you were just getting into the very interesting issue of the case of the land transfer. Now, in the oral argument, the question came up about what exactly the veterans' duties would be to maintain the cross or if they could take it down. And my question for you is, if it is true that they can take down the cross without the land reverting to the government, doesn't that put the transferred land on essentially the same footing as any other private property? And if that's the case, why would the continuing maintenance of the cross on essentially private property be a constitutional problem?
Well, for a couple of reasons. Because the cross will remain designated a national memorial for as long as it's up. So there's really no basis for an argument that if this cross stays up, it's on private property and reflects only the expression of the VFW. Second, one of the bases for the holding that the presence of this cross on federal property violated the Establishment Clause was the favorable governmental access that was given to those who wanted to erect a Christian symbol and not a symbol of another religion. And the transfer itself continues that favorable access because nobody, including the man who wanted to erect a Buddhist symbol on the land, was allowed to bid on the land and allowed to purchase it. Only the very people who had preferential access in the first instance were allowed to get the land. And therefore, you're simply continuing the violation that existed in the first instance. And those two reasons alone, I think, are sufficient to show that the transfer is not permissible, even if the VFW can take the cross down. I think that there are significant questions about that and whether they would think to do it, especially since the government conceded in its briefs that its whole purpose was to ensure that the cross remained up. But even if the VFW does feel capable and believes that it can take it down and the reversionary clause will not go into effect, the preferential access and the continued designation of the cross as a national memorial means the transfer doesn't sever the government's endorsement of this particular religious symbol.
Thank you.
And if I could respond to that, I think the focus now on the congressional designation as a national memorial is revealing, because this monument was not declared a national memorial until 2002 in a congressional act that was a response to this legal proceeding. The monument itself, its history, stems back nearly 70 years before that. In 1934, it was erected. A local resident named John Bembry, who was himself a veteran of World War I, maintained the monument for 50 years. As Mr. Lisberg noted, it was vandalized because it is in the middle of 1.6 million acres of desert, and it was vandalized a number of times, and he repaired it. When he passed away, he asked a close friend of his, Mr. Sandoz, to care for it. And Mr. Sandoz has been caring for this monument for over 20 years. The basis of the lawsuit was not that it was designated an official memorial. The basis of the lawsuit was that the 1.6 million acres was government land, and there was a cross to be found within it that was being maintained by these individuals to honor fallen veterans. Honoring fallen veterans is one of our best traditions, and a legal theory that seeks to remove religious symbols from memorials honoring fallen veterans is not consistent with our Constitution or our tradition.
Thank you. Along those lines, further on the Congress's efforts to transfer the land, this is a question for Mr. Cruz. Isn't Congress's attempt to transfer the land after the cross display was found unconstitutional, does that substantially erode any secular purpose it may have had originally in trying to maintain the memorial?
I don't think it does. Its purpose was clear, to maintain this memorial. And why does it wish to maintain this memorial? Because it's a memorial to honor our fallen veterans that has been there over 70 years, and it is a perfectly legitimate interest of Congress to maintain a long-standing memorial that is valued in the community and that is meaningful. The fact that this monument is today covered in a plywood box visits grievous pain on the families of the veterans and the veterans themselves that surround the monument and that are aware of this litigation. And accordingly, Congress was simply acting to correct the harm that had been caused by this litigation.
Well, if I might respond, a couple of points. I've never once heard Mr. Cruz acknowledge the very real and grievous symbolic harm that the government visits on the families of Jewish war veterans, of Muslim war veterans, and veterans of other non-Christian faiths who are being told by the U.S. government, we're going to honor you with a symbol that means Jesus is the Son of God. And whether you don't believe that or not, we really don't care, because we're choosing to use that religious symbol as the way to recognize your service towards for our country. So I think that that's something that continually gets left out by those people who talk about all the harm that's being visited through this lawsuit. And the reality is that the government has, for more than 10 years, expressed a favoritism towards that particular religious belief and that particular religious expression by allowing certain people to go on government land and erect that symbol. But when others have said, well, we'd like to erect a memorial that speaks to those of another faith, the government said, don't try it, because if you do, we'll arrest you.
And if I may respond to that, I would suggest that the First Amendment does not embody what the Supreme Court has called a heckler's veto, which is the notion that any individual that doesn't share the faith tradition of a particular public display has a right to order it removed. My personal religious background, I'm not Buddhist, and yet I am not offended, and I don't have a right to attack that in the state of Hawaii they recognize Buddha Day, to recognize those with those religious beliefs. It is not at all part of religious liberty to have a veto over an acknowledgement of the religious faith of others. What the Constitution and the First Amendment is about is protecting all of our religious liberty.
And I would simply submit that if what Hawaii did was say, for example, we have no interest in recognizing or acknowledging any other religion other than Buddhism, that we're not talking about a heckler's veto, but an impermissible government preference for one faith over another, which I think is very inconsistent with the founders' desire to end the history of religious divisiveness that they came from in Europe. And it wouldn't, to my mind, be a heckler's veto, but certainly proper for Mr. Cruz to be able to challenge and courts to strike down government statements that in effect say, we're only going to acknowledge one religion. Or when we talk about United States participation in World War I, we're going to choose to acknowledge that through a symbol that means Jesus is the Son of God. And I think if you look at the very eloquent brief on behalf of the Muslim American Veterans Affairs Council, it says the unspoken part of that, which is true of many religions, is that if you don't believe that Jesus is the Son of God, you will not be saved. Is that a proper message for the government to send to American veterans who are not from the Christian faith tradition? I don't think it's a proper message, and I don't think it's a constitutional message.
And every word of that argument would apply equally to the Canadian Cross of Sacrifice and the Argonne Cross and crosses throughout the country, which demonstrates the breadth of the argument and which also demonstrates why I do not believe a majority of the Supreme Court would agree with it on the merits.
Well, in fact, the discussion of the many, many crosses, in fact, the people who brought amicus briefs in on this case struggled to find, I believe, 10 crosses that were standalone and that were ostensibly war memorials. But in a number of cases, for example, there's a Celtic cross. Clearly reflects, it when it was given specifically to reflect the sacrifice of an Irish-American brigade in the Civil War and a variety of others. So, in fact, there's not a broad tradition of recognizing American sacrifice and American soldier sacrifice through a single sectarian religious symbol.
Thank you.
Nor should there be.
That actually brings us to the very interesting question of standing in this case. Mr. Buono is not actually offended by the cross itself, but by the exclusion of other religious symbols or representative statuary from other groups on the same piece of land. So my question is, if, in fact, anyone has the standing to assert that someone else was wrongfully excluded on government land, isn't that going to make it impossible for government entities to ever have control over the monuments on their property? Because won't that create a situation in which there's either an open forum or nothing? Because the government there's not going to be a way for them to pick and choose among historical figures or civic groups or the ideas the government wants to praise publicly, under your theory.
No, for a variety of different reasons. First of all, you're factually incorrect as to what Mr. Buono has a problem with. He is not asserting the rights of others who were excluded. The exclusion of others does reflect what he believes is an impermissible preference, governmental preference, which is inconsistent with the Establishment Clause. As a result, he is not bringing a speech claim. I would agree that he would not have standing to bring a speech claim if what he said was, I'm upset that somebody else wanted to put up another monument and express a different point of view. I didn't make that request. I have no interest in doing it. What the favoritism does is reflect in part a favoritism that he objects to. And in addition, Mr. Buono's has never said that that's his only objection. And in fact, part of Mr. Buono's objection is the fact that the government has repeatedly asserted, oh, in effect, this symbol has no religious significance. It's really just a secular symbol of memorialization. As a devout Catholic, Mr. Buono is deeply troubled by that governmental assertion. It basically negates the intrinsic religious significance of the Christian symbol that to him is very meaningful as a religious symbol and is not in any way a secular symbol.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cruz and Mr. Eliasberg, for being with us today. We really appreciate your participation in this podcast, and thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this practice group podcast. For related materials to this podcast and other Federalist Society multimedia, please visit the Federalist Society's website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.